All right, David, what is going on here? So first of all, yes, indeed, my grandfather would have been livid with me. My grandmother would have been singing along. They both came from Germany.
As did my dad.
Yes.
And I could just hear after that at bar mitzvahs and weddings, then we just move straight on to Rabbi Nachman. Don't you think?
Yes. No, it's a kind of idea. That's not one of my least favorite songs along with Mazel and Brocha. But what? David, yes, so David, I had no intention of playing the song.
You know,
I genuinely had no intention of playing the song. But then when Hilda says, when Hilda said, and she started it, she says, great song, anything better than that abhorrent German song.
So
what made me play it?
You know, Howard, let me just explain this.
Yes.
If someone says to you, I often don't think of a red elephant.
Right.
What did you just do? Don't remind him. Don't say the word.
So I'm right. It was Hilda's fault.
It was completely
Hilda started.
She provoked you.
Right. Right.
She reminded you, and
the psychologist in private practice said this.
Yes. Yes. A professional. Mm.
Do not mention the German song, and then we have got a chance.
Okay. No. But seriously, what is it about that? And it's not an analysis of me particularly, because there are a lot of people like me that are just impossible.
Well,
walking around.
We call it passive aggressive, Howard.
Oh, I thought I was aggressive.
No, just
am I passive aggressive?
You're passive aggressive because, that's exactly it. Like a naughty schoolboy, like the teacher says, do not chew chewing gum in class,
and you see it as a challenge,
and you SMS your mom and say, please.
Yeah, send chewing gum ASAP.
Spearmint.
but it is interesting. What makes us do that? What makes somebody like me do that?
Well, as I said, I think it's a little bit of
like schoolboy.
Yeah, like making a point around that. And if I may say, Howard, just between you and me, it's that passive aggressive.
But I'm not passive aggressive. I'm aggressive aggressive. I don't want to be passive aggressive.
No, I've never heard you punch anyone.
Never would punch anyone.
Right. So you played a song in German.
Right.
That's passive aggressive. So that's my analysis.
Okay.
And I think for me, certain people, you know, if you tell them not to do it, it's like,
I'm very bad at being told what to do.
Right.
You give them something to cry about.
Yes, there's that.
Especially when you believe that there's nothing wrong with it. So.
Right, that is true. Melinda said it's the psychology of Dafka.
That is the Dafka.
Now, it's interesting. So let's just explain the word Dafka. The word Dafka means, it's a Jewish word, but it means deliberate. Like you do something.
Despite. Oh, okay.
And it's not for spite. It's actually not.
No.
Dafka isn't about spite. It's about doing something very contrary, very deliberately, like not going somewhere dafka.
Right.
I think I don't know how else to.
Yeah.
If you've got an explanation for that word, that would be great.
Right. No, it's like going contrary, even though, you know, you're doing it on purpose, even though you know and you've been told that you shouldn't be doing that, so you go specially to do it.
Right.
You
the psychology of Dafka. I like that. Gimple says, I love the song and my kids adore it. I wish these people who drive Mercedes and BMs wouldn't complain about being played on Chaim. Melinda likes it on her Zumba playlist. For sure. And someone else saying, because you're a stir fryer. And since M says it's your way to show that you won't be pushed around.
Yes,
I guess it is that. Yes. And that is the child in me that says, don't tell me what to do.
100%.
You're not the boss of me.
You're not the boss of me.
Yes.
And Dafka, you mentioned it. I'll do it.
Right.
Not only mentioned it, but said, don't.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't put the word don't.
Better than that abhorrent German song you like to play.
So she would have said to you,
just reading it again. I want to go back. One more time. But we're not going to do that.
No,
we're
please,
not going
Howard.
To do that. Very, very interesting. I mean, it's not our topic of conversation today, but it really is a fascinating, thing because, you know, we always talk about reverse psychology with our kids. Don't do that. Don't eat this. Don't eat this. Oh, you've eaten it.
Right.
You know, so, but it is age appropriate for a 3-year-old, I guess, not for a 51-year-old.
yes, Howard.
Right. I didn't need a psychologist to tell me that.
No, you told yourself.
Yes.
Right. You worked that out on your I will say no more.
Right. Okay. So it's just a fascinating thing. I'd love your thoughts on it. When do you stop using, and is it bad to actually use a technique on a child?
No, I don't think so. You know, obviously it depends on the situation, but I think, how often have we said to our child, I don't think you can brush your teeth. Mm. No way, mm. you know. Mm. And it does work, you know. Okay, I'll show them that I can. And it's very innocuous sometimes after, you know, but often before, you know, I suppose after 15, it does get a bit of an issue.
It becomes problematic. Yes. 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 Yes.
But absolutely not, you know. It's a way of motivating other
people. But doesn't it teach us to be these people?
No, I think it's a personality trait, Howard.
Oh, you mean I got this?
I like this. You're a stirrer and you're a, I could imagine you sitting in class at Yeshiva College and,
I was very difficult.
I was very difficult. He was like, I could imagine your parents being called in and said,
no, so it's interesting because I succeeded within the school system. Mm. But for certain people, and unfortunately most of them were rabbis, I was very, very difficult to handle.
Yeah, because I imagine that you had your thoughts and you had your
opinions. And I didn't want to be just told you have to do this, mm. otherwise you're going to burn in hell kind of thing. Not that they said that, they were just told the gay kids that. But, sorry. you know, that just slipped out. But
it's actually so relevant to what you asked to talk about today, yes. because this idea about how do we, and again, you know, the way you put the topic, maybe we need to adjust it slightly. How do we help our children not to be part of the herd?
Right. So that was the topic, sorry, just to tell our listeners, because they weren't on our WhatsApp conversation.
Maybe we should put them on.
Yeah, maybe we should just tell them what we wanted to talk about. I asked David to maybe address the issue of how we teach our children to have the confidence. How do we give our children the confidence to stand separately from the herd? Because very often as adults, we're much part of the herd. We need to fit into a society. We need to behave, and we expect a certain conformist behavior around our children, which is critical. Otherwise, you can't function in society. Sure. But how do you balance that with giving your children the confidence of having their own view, to stand up to, perhaps as I did as a kid, and I didn't make my life easy, I can tell you. Mm-hmm. Many times I was outside on the corridor because rabbi didn't like
what, just probably seen it was. Cheeky. It was probably seen as talking.
And perhaps I was. Perhaps I was a pretentious little brat. Mm. But these were genuine things that I was feeling and arguing about in terms perhaps of religion, in terms of all sorts of other things. Mm-hmm. And the rabbonim that I connected with that could get to that, there was no conflict at all, mm-hmm. because we would, it was very powerful. But there were many teachers and rabbis that I came up against that made my life very difficult.
Well, it's really relevant because I think for me, clearly in your home, and maybe a little bit of genetics as well that, you know, we throw in. But in your home, opinions were welcomed. You know, we wanted to, you were heard. You weren't told to keep quiet, you know. And I think for me, it also has to do very much around our experience as children. When we become adults, you know, it affects us. It affects how we mediate, you know, with, and we parent or we teach, if we are teachers, the children around us. And for example, you know, again, you know, you obviously in your home, I would imagine how it was encouraged to, as I say, speak, encouraged to be heard and then taken seriously, no matter what you said. It wasn't put down and you have to confide, you know, stick to what we are telling you.
Yeah, we never had this children need to be seen and not heard approach.
And clearly, you know, your parents weren't threatened by that. There was an openness. But when it comes to teachers who are saying, you will listen and this is the way it is, and you don't, you know, again, just like the caller said to you, you know, you can't and you mustn't, you know, then you go, hang on, but why not? And I can and I should. And until you get a logical answer that kind of explains to you why you shouldn't play that song, you know,
it lands for me.
Right.
And the whole German language thing was one that I did go through. I wrote an article for the Jewish Reporter around it because I do think we have to look at how we remember the Holocaust, how we educate around the Holocaust, and I'm not sure that not playing a song that was written probably in the 21st century by a guy that was born not more than 4 or 5 weeks ago is a way to show that. I don't know.
Right. So exactly that. I think, you know, when we're younger, when we are, you know, 4 or 5, even up to the age of 9, 10, you know, we really look up to our parents and we try to often emulate them, and our parents give us very positive, you know, messages when they do emulate them, because it's like, oh, you know, they're becoming like us. But the hardest thing to do as a parent, the hardest thing to do is to allow your child to become an individual. And that is part of parenting. And often we have difficulty with that.
We're going to be back with this conversation. I think it's a very important one. Joshua says, Howard, I bet you don't know how to play Muzzle On. Ronnie says, I am finished. You vowed you'd never play this again. Remember this at Kol Nidre. That's on Yom Kippur. When I stand before God.
I hope Hades listening.
No, I hope no one's listening.
We've worked you out.
She's got that.
Howard, I bet you can't take out the rubbish.
After 29 years of marriage, she's got this. So she absolutely has. Joshua says, I should have asked for something that you really wanted. Karen says, best music today. And that is a happy song. This is an interesting one as well from Benjamin. He says, hi, Howard, just for your information, I have this old rescue dog. Around lunchtime, he usually just lies around resting. On a Tuesday midday, they played Muzzle and Brocha, and this dog became absolutely animated. He obviously just loves the tune. No, I think he was just trying to find a way to get away from the pain and the misery. He was looking for a cliff to leap himself over. He was thinking, you know what? I'm a rescue. I've been treated badly my whole life. And now this? Like, why? All right, time is 8:38. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem. 101.9 Chai FM. That was, of course, in case you had no idea, JJ Fried with Muzzle and Brocha. Worst song known to man. And the most irritating part is you find yourself, I find myself singing along to it.
We have made such progress this
Yeah, this has been a good session.
This has been amazing. Yes. We started off with understanding who you are, how you work, and the listeners need to know. They need to know.
Thank you, David.
I'm feeling good. I really don't feel patronized at all right now, David.
No, they need to know, Howard, that you were singing along.
Oh, I just said it. I was singing along.
And you were humming.
I enjoyed it, though. I said I was singing along.
I didn't see a smile, but you were kind of swaying in your seat a little bit.
Yeah, I saw that.
Did you?
Zanati, did you notice?
I saw that with the shoulders moving.
It was just windy.
Huge progress this morning.
All right, David, at 8:39, we are talking about the giving our kids the ability to obviously function well within society, but still having the courage to stand up and stand aside from the herd. And we saw a very, very interesting example of this, and that was earlier this week when Patrice Motsepe made a comment to Donald Trump that Africa loves you, and Africa lost its mind, or some people in Africa lost its mind. Patrice Motsepe then apologizes because he just didn't want this. And it was all nonsense. It was all really just about the fact that whoever said that doesn't like Donald Trump, which of course is absolutely fine. It's their view. But having the courage to stand aside is not easy.
You know, we were talking about Holocaust remembrance, and that's exactly what we're talking about, is, you know, raising children that have their
just hold on, I'm sorry, can I please read this?
Of course.
I'm going to interrupt this.
No,
to read
sounds
this.
Important.
This is from Kate. You are being so dafka about such a sensitive subject like the German song during the Holocaust. It shows such lack of Derech Eretz. I feel sorry for your wife. That's from Kate. The truth is, Kate, I actually also feel sorry for my wife.
Yeah, we all do.
Everybody does. Like, take your number and wait your turn. No. Anyway, carry on, David. You were saying.
I do say that to Heidi.
What, you feel sorry for her?
Has he been behaving? That's the first thing I ask when I see her. Has it been all right?
Shame. No, anyway,
I think for me it's very, very difficult. I mean, we're talking about, you know, remembering the Holocaust, about standing up and swimming upstream and doing what other people are doing just because that's what they're doing, and for me to stand up with your, you know, in your belief, and if that means talking above the crowd and as I say, swimming upstream, then absolutely. And I think for me, a huge part of that comes from parenting. And I think if we can keep in mind that parenting isn't really about you know, getting the daughter or son you want, but it's actually in wanting the person you get. So I think really allowing your child to grow, and to try and follow them. And, you know, it's so interesting that when we're younger, you know, our children tend to, you know, get interested in things that we are interested in, you know, whatever it might be.
Right, right.
But I think it's so important as, and it is very important because it is part of being a good parent, allowing your children to become individuals,
right,
allowing them to separate, that actually when they become, begin to separate, that we actually start to become interested in what they're interested in. And yes, you know, obviously, genuinely, we're not, we might not love the music that they listen to or enjoy the games that they play. Mm. But that's the point, is really about trying to show interest in what they show interest in order to keep them close. So that's the irony, is that parents often think that by trying to model the child, to try to, you know,
so
put them into a box and keep them close means they need to stick to what we did. But the irony is,
so they've actually got to learn that courage to stand aside or stand up or stand differently at home. Right. That's where it all starts.
Wanting the child you get. So, you know, it's not about modeling the child into what you believe would be the right way to go. And of course, we're not saying, you know, we don't, you know, teach our children manners and values. But certainly following them when they become individuals and showing interest in them and wanting and loving that person, even though it goes against our grade. And I'm going to use a silly example.
Right.
And I got permission from her this morning to use it. My daughter wanted avocado Crocs. And
what?
Avocado Crocs.
I don't know what those
Crocs,
are.
Crocs, you know the Crocs that you used
no,
to love.
No, I don't know Crocs. I don't know what they are.
Okay. Anyway, they're the type
what
of
is
shoe.
It?
It's a type of shoe.
Okay, fine.
Yeah. And they actually came with avocados on them. And it's a spectacle. I'll send you a picture.
So in other words, they take an ugly shoe and they make it uglier.
Correct.
Okay,
correct.
I got it. I understand.
She loved them. Wanted them for ages. And eventually, to my wife's horror, I went and got them for her, and because she genuinely loved them and wore them on every possible occasion. And we told her, you know, bar mitzvahs and weddings, please.
Out.
but that's, you know, again, I know it's a small example, but allowing your child and to follow your child, even though it might not be your cup of tea, because that's them.
So in other words, it's even talking about, and I guess that's right, because certainly I've noticed it with my daughter that you know, some of her friends are religious and some of her friends are not religious, and she dresses in a fairly modest way, and which means she's often different to some of her friends, and that doesn't always make it easy. You need the confidence to be able to be a bit different.
And the way that you can encourage this kind of individuality, and sometimes, you know, children become individuals who fit into the crowd, you know, but that's who they wanted and needed to become. And that's important to say. You know, we don't have to make our children different. But if they are wanting to be different, you know, it's so important that we sit around the table and we get their opinion, get their thoughts, validate their thoughts, talk about their thoughts, and encourage it. And I think encourage their voice to be heard. And the other thing is allow them to, you know, that's really what it's about when you become an adolescent. Mm. It's really about experimenting and exploring. Now, obviously, when we say experimenting, you know, the first thing that comes to mind is drugs and alcohol. But no, it's about experimenting with life, allowing them to have different experiences, and following them and trusting them, and showing interest.
But also teaching appropriateness. And I think I think this is a key in my view, maybe, to balancing this as, in other words, to give your kids the confidence to know that, you know what, you can have a different opinion, but you've got to be careful or sensitive as to when, I mean, it's rich coming from me, but sensitive as to when to express that view.
Yes.
In other words, you might disagree with the person whose house we're at, but as a 13-year-old or 12-year-old or 15-year-old, you know, it's not appropriate for you to talk out at the table necessarily and disagree with the host when there's all other, you know, when there are other adults around. Mm. We can have that conversation around it a bit later, and your view is absolutely valid and yours, but there's still a way to behave. behave that doesn't perhaps set you too far aside from a functioning, from being able to function in society.
I think there's a very big difference between allowing your child to become an individual, to become independent, and not setting values and morals, a moral compass for them. I think, that mustn't be confused at all. So I think giving them those values, giving them that moral compass is essential. But as far as allowing them to develop as a person, that is something, very different. And it takes a very, very brave parent to walk that walk with a child.
Mm. And it's much harder as a parent.
Absolutely. Because, obviously we are informed by what we have experienced. So some parents really want their children to have the same experience that they had growing up. Or they actually want them to have something completely different because they didn't have a good experience growing up.
Mm.
And again, it's so hard at some stage just to let go and say, maybe it isn't good for my child. This is actually not what my child needs just because I needed it. So I think the first step is really for parents to just be aware of what they, about their
who they are.
Who they are.
Yes, and how important it is for them that their children conform.
Exactly.
Melinda says, does David give lessons in appropriateness? I'd love to say it to my family. Yeah, we can get a group discount. I think that it's, in fact, often David and I have spoken about running courses, doing like a Sunday course where we talk about various aspects of this type of thing. But that actually would be quite a nice idea. And Ronnie says, oi, I'm not sure I would have forgiven that if I were your wife, David.
What?
The avocado.
No, listen, it took a lot of. She wasn't very happy.
I do think it's harder for a mom.
Yeah. No, it is. It is.
It's harder for a mom with a daughter.
But I think this is the kind of thing. It's a small thing. But allowing your child, obviously within reason, to choose their clothes. To allow them to wear.
I will never.
What?
Avocado crocs, never.
Well,
what do you mean?
As a mom.
Never.
If I'm, never.
Never.
Well, no.
It's because she's on to some extent endangering herself.
Mm-hmm. Can't just wear whatever you want.
Well, it's actually interesting because obviously anyone who's had the pleasure of raising a daughter knows this story. And, I landed up with a job, especially on Shabbat on the weekends for my daughter because somehow I could handle it a little bit differently. And the way in which I actually figured it out how to do it was the first thing we'd always do on a Saturday morning, on a Shabbat morning is talk about what color the day is because sometimes the day does have a color.
Yes.
And once we did that, then I would pick out three items and say, choose which one you would like to wear around that. And that way she would have the sense of choice.
Right.
And, but it was still within a range of acceptability.
And then again, so that empowers your child. So it's like, as I say, it's within reason, so I think it's important that we point that out, that it's not about just having carte blanche and, obviously if the child's going to wear something which would clearly bring negative attention where they're going to be, bullied or where people are going to make fun of her or him. Absolutely within reason, allow them to express themselves. I mean, it's interesting how, my daughter and I enjoy going shopping for her clothes because she always says, I let her buy what she wants, But again, it is a fine line. As I say, allowing her to express herself, but making sure that there is a line. There is a line. Sure.
Yeah. In fact, we had this just over a year ago. I'm sure I spoke about it on radio that when my wife said, please, will you take our daughter shopping for camp?
Right.
And this was before she actually, so it was actually 2 years ago. So before she settled on her own image as to who she wanted to be. And we were at Cotton On and she picked up something. I knew that. I mean, it was a skirt. I'm not even sure it was a skirt. It looked like a scarf.
As soon as you said Cotton On, I was like, oh, that's my shop. So nothing modern.
She says she wants to try this on. And I said, all right, go try it on. I mean, I knew what the answer was going to be. The outcome was going to be. But anyway, she went in and she came out of the change room wearing literally a scarf around her waist. And I said, what do you think? She said, that's a bit short. And then she looked at me and she said, you're doing very well. Mom would be sobbing by now.
But that's the point. You know that you had to say maybe to your daughter, just like her father.
Right.
You know, you cannot wear that. That is completely
inappropriate. Oh, it would have been, because I know me.
It was the weirdest thing. So when I was in varsity, I went shopping with my dad, and obviously he let me buy whatever I wanted, and I bought these really, really short shorts, which my then boyfriend had a problem with.
That's interesting.
That was very interesting. I was like, well, my own dad didn't have a problem with this. Why do you
that
have a problem
is
with this?
Fascinating.
That was very interesting.
That is
so,
indeed.
So Nati, you stop laughing because when you, I'm just waiting for you to have children.
I know.
This is not an easy thing.
No, certainly not. Time is 8:51. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem 101.9. Are there takeaways from this?
Definitely.
Because it is a very hard balance for parents.
It is very hard.
And just a reminder, what we're trying to establish is how we give our kids the confidence to stand aside from the herd whilst not being complete social misfits, really.
Absolutely. I think the first thing, as we've said today, is that, you know, the takeaway is be aware of yourself. Be aware of what your expectations are of your children, and try and understand where those come from, you know, and we often are influenced by how we were brought up, whether we've had good experiences, bad experiences, our own values. And I think it's so important to reflect and become aware of yourself, because that's really going to help, you know, to allow you to allow your child to be who they need to be. And very important, and we do this often, and it's so hurtful, is don't compare your children to other people. Don't compare them to other siblings. Don't compare them to their friends or cousins. It really is.
Why can't you be like that child from next
door?
Yes.
I have often asked my kids that.
100%.
Hasn't worked.
Okay. No. Right. And so I think that's very, very important. The other thing is drop the agenda. It's so difficult. Again, that kind of links back to being aware of who you are.
Mm.
Watch your agenda, you know, that you have an agenda for your child rather than following your child. And
but as a parent, we do need an agenda, David.
To a degree.
We have a responsibility. Our responsibility is to get our kids educated and to bring them, to equip them to be decent, functioning, kind, good people in a world.
Right. But for example, you know, support and encourage their interests. So that's
So as long as it doesn't fall outside your mission statement.
Exactly. So if
that's really maybe what it is.
That you feel that you, for example, have had a difficulty in your life because you did not learn something at school, and you're obsessed now that your child should follow this, course in life. That's following an agenda. And so I think that's very important. And, get your child's opinion and encourage your child's opinion. And obviously within reason, we still want to bring up good moral children. And I think I'm going to say it again, and this is so important, and probably the hardest thing about parenting is that, parenting is not about getting or making the child, that you want. It's about wanting the child you've got. And I'm going to say that again and again, because with a child that you have got is the one that we need to try and find out who they are. We need to try and find out what their passions are, what their interests are. And we need to try and embrace that, even when it goes against, who we are as parents.
Not easy at all, but a very, very important conversation. David Abramson, thank you for giving us that perspective. I do think it's a hard balance to achieve, but we do need to, I think the first step is being aware of these agendas and these push-pull factors, and trying to establish that as a value, that we do want our kids to be able to be who they need to be for themselves, and not try and be everything to everybody else and lose themselves along the way.
Right. And the irony is, if we follow them into adolescence, into who they really are, we're going to keep them closer rather than trying to mold them into what we want them to be, which could push them away. And we definitely want to keep our adolescents closer.
Absolutely right. It is 9:01. Apologies, your news is slightly late. Thank you for your participation today and your input. I absolutely loved it, even the unloving ones. Hope we'll see you all back tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Don't be late.